We're holding on Kuf Yud Amud Beis, 9 lines from the bottom. The Mishnah had said, the Mishnah had said that the third category where each one can inherit from the other, we said fathers can inherit from sons, which we worked out that there's two droshas that tell us that sons can inherit their fathers, of course, and we worked out how we know that the son goes ahead of the daughter always, in the sense that if there are boys, then the girls don't inherit at all. And then the third one, the Mishnah had said, is that paternal brothers inherit one another. So ra'achim na'av nochlan manchilim fuller. So Manolon, where do we know that from? And the point is, how do we know that applies only to brothers from the same father and not brothers from the same mother? We have a Gzeira Shava on the word Achva, which means brotherhood from the sons of Yaakov. And the sons of Yaakov, they all shared the same father, but they were from four different mothers. Namely, here by Yerusha, it says in Asatamas Nachlosay Laechov, you give his inheritance to his brother. By the 12 Shvatim, you have the expression when they're first speaking to Yosef, when they're in Mitzrayim, not knowing of course that it's Yosef yet, they tell him we're 12 brothers. We're 12 brothers, the sons of our father. Now, once it says that there were brothers, then why does it have to say the sons of one father? So that teaches us, therefore, that the definition of brotherhood in halacha is only when they're from the same father. So malahalan mina av v'loy mina eim, afkan mina av v'loy mina eim. So the Gemara asks, why do we even need that drosha? The lomali, why do we need that drosha anyway? The pasuk says that if he has no close relatives, then you give it to a relative. And as we learned before, mishpachas of kruy mishpacha, mishpachas eim ein kruy mishpacha. We learned as the Gemara had mentioned before on Kuftes and Mabez, only in halacha, only the father's family is called mishpacha, and the mother's is not. So automatically, from that pasuk alone, you know that if they're maternal brothers, then they don't yaushin from each other. And the Gemara says, Einochinami, you're right, we actually didn't need the drosha from the Gzeira Shava of Achva. V'chi itmar, the rabba le'inyin nibum itmar, the truth is, rabba's Jerusha about the Rabbah's Jerusha about the Gzeira Shava from the word Achim is actually needed as far as Yibum. Namely, when the pasuk tells us Ki Yeshu Achim Yachdav, when brothers are living together and then one of them passes away, etc., that Yibum is done. How do we know that it's only a brother from the father's side and not if it's a brother only from the mother's side? That we learn from that Gzeira Shava. It wasn't really needed over here. The point still is, though, that Itvar explains that the Gemara is saying if it were even without the word mishpachta, still the word of Kal V'Chomer would have also told us that only paternal brothers yarshin one another. Okay. Next, the Mishnah had said, "Bro, Ishet is even chol of them."
Yeah. It seems a bit contradictory to say that the mother's family is not considered family when it's the mother.
Obviously, we don't mean they're not considered family at all. Obviously, I mean they're considered family as far as Arias, for example. But in terms of the word mishpacha, as used in the Torah, is limited to a father's family because mishpacha is used often as a synonym of shevet, and your mother is not necessarily from the same shevet as you, whereas your father, by definition, is. That's what we mean.
Well, the Shevet maybe, but I mean, the mother gives the Yiddish type. How can we say it's not mishpacha?
Of course, and we're not saying that biologically they're not mishpacha or anything. We're saying as far as when the Torah uses the word mishpacha, it uses it to mean something along the same lines as Shevet, either an exact synonym sometimes, or at least something very closely related, and therefore it means specifically from the father's side. The Gemara had worked that all out on Kuf Tes Amud Beis that we have. Now the pasuk says l'mishpachosam l'veisavosam, then that means that tells us that the word mishpacha for purposes of these kinds of halachas is limited to a father's mishpacha. that actually led into the whole discussion about Yohanes and Moshe's grandson and Pesel Micha and all that, where the Pasuk calls him Mimishpachas, where the Pasuk says on him Mimishpachas Yehuda, and the Gemara had discussed what does that mean? Is his mother from Yehuda, or the Gemara had ended up saying that it means something else?
The Mishpacha alludes to Shevet.
So the Mishpacha basically means something along the same lines as Shevet, yeah. Or at least something closely related, yeah. Okay. Next, the Mishnah had said the second category in the Mishnah is Neuchelin v'loy manchilin, is people who inherit from a different relative, but it's not reciprocal. That relative doesn't inherit from them if they pass away. And the first one on that list, the Mishnah had said, was Var Ishas Imoy v'chola, a man to his mother. So a man's mother passes away, then he yaushins her, but the reverse is not true. The mother doesn't inherit from her son, Alpitara. So the Gemara says, Menohani Mili, where do we know that from? Namely, the Rashbam explains, the question is, how do we know in particular, maybe we should say, a son yarshins from his father, a daughter inherits from her mother. Because when do we see, when the Pasuk says that when a person dies and he doesn't have sons, then you give the nachla to his daughters, that's specifically by a man. Maybe by a woman is different. So how do we know, first of all, that her son inherits her, and how do we know that her daughter doesn't go ahead of her son for that? Tosfos also adds the point, when it's from the Rivam, that it's one thing, the other cases where a woman passes away, a man's daughter or his sister or what have you, obviously, her nearest male relative is going to yarshin, because then at least it stays within the same shevet. And obviously what's going to happen to a woman in the chasim, they're not just going to be hefter. Here the point is, since we see on the face of it, the pasuk doesn't, the psukim make a big deal about it in Parshas Maaseh, that we don't want nachla going from one shevet to another, and when a mother is yarshined by her son, nearly always, or not nearly always, but a substantial number of times, it's going to happen that that means that nachla is going from one shevet to another, so how do we know that it's so? So the Gemara says, the Tanan Abunan, we learn in a Braisa as follows. The Pasuk says, in that section in Parshas Maaseh, when it's talking about this matter of Nachla not going from one Shevet to another, the Pasuk says, V'chol bas yereshes Nachla mimatois b'nei Yisrael. Any daughter who inherits property from the Shvatim mimatois, in plural, b'nei Yisrael of the Jewish people. So okay, I mean obviously, you know, on a very pshat level, you would say it means from among any of the Shvatim. But the Gemara is bothered by the Loshen. It sounds like she yarshins from two shvatim. Heyach bas yereshes shnei matos. How does it happen in the first place that a girl, that a woman is inheriting from two different shvatim? Ela zusha via mishavet echad ve'ima mishavet achar. So the pasuk is hinting at a case where her father is from one shevet and her mother is from a different shevet. Umesu, and they die v'yirashdan, and she inherits them. So far we see that the nachla of the mother goes to the children. Now we're going to continue. The next thing is how we know that the same thing is true of a son. We're going to get back to that in a second. But the point is that the point is at least we see that a mother's Yerusha is yarshin by some child of hers. Now, Rashbam points out, first of all, again, the Pasuk is making a point of saying that we don't want Nachla to go from one Shevet to another, and then therefore that a woman who yarshin property shouldn't marry outside her Shevet. Here we're talking about that the Pasuk is implying it's going to be just that. The fact is, later on in the Perek, we're going to talk about that din, that they have to marry within their Shevet, applied only in that generation. One of the things we celebrate on Chamisha Asaba'av, as the Gemara is going to tell us later in the Perek, is the point is that they were able to, that they found a heter for that, and from then on, a woman is allowed to marry outside her shevet in such a case. But besides that, the Rashbam refers to later on in the Gemara, it's going to explain that, say for example, that, when this mother got married, she wasn't yet yarshining anything because she had brothers, so they were in line to yarshin from her parents. Then after she got married, they passed away. Obviously, we're not going to say that she has to get divorced now that she's the sole heir. We say that now there's a case where she's able to yarshin from one shevet and pass it on to another, namely to her children who are from a different shevet. So the pasuk is implying that to begin with, you can have a girl who yarshins from two different shvatim, namely that her parents themselves were from different shvatim. So now the braisa continues, v'ein li'alabas. So far then you would only know that a daughter inherits from her mother in a case like that, or inherits from her parents. Ben minayin, what about, how do we know the same thing applies to a son? And meaning, in other words, that the same din applies to yarshining from a mother as it does from a father, namely that the son always gets first rights, and only if there's no sons do the daughter inherit, do the daughters inherit. So the answer is a marta kavachoymer. That we can learn by way of a kavachoymer. Uma bas shahura koich v'nichse av, madach a daughter who has a weaker koyach when it comes to the father's nechassim, namely that if she has any brothers, then they get the Yerusha and she doesn't. Yofa koich v'nichse av, and yet we're saying that she has a power, a power when it comes to the nechassim of her mother, that we just learned from the pasuk that she's able to yarshin from her mother, v'chobas yereshes nachla mimat tois b'nei Yisrael, which tells us that she's able to yarshin from her mother. So then, so then a son who has a stronger position when it comes to the nechassim of the father, namely, again, that he's first in line for yarshining it, shouldn't it be a kavachoymer then that his position is stronger when it comes to the nechassim of the mother? So meaning, in other words, that and the braisa finishes off, umimokim shabasa. Or not finishes off, the braisa continues. Omimokim shabasa. Now, from that very place, from that very kalvachomer, then we can conclude as follows. Once we're saying that we learn from that kalvachomer that a son is able to yarshin from his mother, because if he has a stronger position with the nechassim of the father, as stated in the pasuk, we shouldn't say that he's any weaker when it comes to the mother. Well then, once we have that kalvachomer, then furthermore, we can go further and say, malahalam ben kodim labas, just like when it comes to yarshining from a father, the son goes ahead of the daughter. If there's sons, then they yarshin and the daughters do not. Afkan ben kodim labas, so it is also with yarshin from a mother, that the son goes first. So that's how the Tanakhama of this Braisa learns that not only does a son inherit from his mother, as stated in the Mishnah, but that he goes ahead of his sisters, just like with Nechassim of the father. Now, then the Braisa continues, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yossi, Omru, Mishum, Rabbi Zechariah, Ben Akatsav, they say no. No, both a son and a daughter are equal when it comes to nechosim of a mother, meaning, in other words, when it comes to a father, yes, the pasuk specifies that the son, or implies at least, that the sons go first, and only then if there's no sons, as the pasuk says, ishti yomos, when a man dies, uvein ein loy, and he has no sons, then you give the daughter the daughter the inheritance. That's only when it comes to a father, say these Tanoyim in the name of Rabbi Zechariah ben Akatsav. But when it comes to a mother's nechassim, we don't have the pasuk telling us that. And as the Gemara is going to point out, he doesn't accept the second part of what the Tanakhama had said before. He agrees that the sons can yarshin, but not that they should go ahead of the daughters. So basically, since we're learning it from a kavachomer, then he says there's only so far you can go with the kavachomer. So my time, daya levomen adin lius kenodin, because he says when you make something by a kavachomer, as we've learned before, in particular in Baba Kama, we had a whole sugya about it, then it's enough daya that what you learn from a kavachomer should not be any stronger than what you learned from. So if you're going to tell me that a son yarshins from his mother by virtue of a kavachomer, you can't make him stronger than the daughter, namely that he should go ahead of her. So therefore, the maximum you can do is say that they would be equal and say, therefore, that when the mother passes away, then the sons and the daughters inherit her equally. Okay. So the question is, the Tanakhama le Dorish Dayai. So what are you telling me then? The Kavachomer does not, the Tanakhama does not hold of this concept of Dayai. And he would say it's fine to learn the son from the daughter by a Kavachomer and then make the son even stronger by saying that he goes ahead of his sisters. Isn't the whole concept of Dayai something daraisa, the same yud gomidus shatara nedreshes behem, of which the first one is kavachomer, includes in the very concept of kavachomer is inherent the idea of daya. Each of the yud gomidus shatara nedreshes behem is kind of a family of rules We have the one that we say in the Braisa of Rabbi Shmuel is the basic rule, and then you have details of it that are mentioned in various places in Shas. Chal v'chomer, for example, here you have the detail within it of Dayoi. With Gzera Shava, you have the detail that is mentioned in various places in Shas of Mufna, whether you're making Gzera Shava between two places, is the word, in fact, otherwise unnecessary in both places, and so forth with each of the others. So, the whole concept of Daya is Daraisa, the Tanya, as we learn in the Braisa. In that Braisa of Rabbi Shmuel, which goes after we have the brief listing that we say in morning davening, it continues, Midin Kavachoyma Ketzad. How does the concept of Kavachoyma work? Or where do we have an example in Torah of a Kavachoyma? So, for example, at the end of Parshas Baaloischa, you have the whole story with Miriam speaking badly against Moshe and getting tzaraas, and the pasuk says, "Vayomer Hashem Amos." So Moshe davens, so she gets tzaraas, and Moshe davens for her kel norafon Allah. So Vayomer Hashem Amos, so Hashem replies to Moshe, "Va'avia yorek b'faneha." If her father had spat in her face, meaning in other words, if she had spoken disrespectfully to her father, and therefore her father had gotten angry at her, halosi kolim shivas yamim, wouldn't it be right that she should be embarrassed and consider herself like in sequestered or quarantined away for 7 days? Well then, if that would be the case for a human parent, then how much more so for the Shechina, it would be right that she should be in seclusion for 14 days. Why 14 days? We'll explain in a second. Ella daya levomen adin lias kenodin, but based on the rule of Dayoi, we're going to say it's enough that it's going to be like the case that you learned from, and therefore we're going to say we're not going to. Therefore, Hashem says I'm not going to keep her in seclusion with Taras for 14 days, but 7 days at least it has to be. Now, why 14 days? So Tosfos brings from Rabbeinu Tam, because we know there are three partners in the creation of a person, is the father, mother, and Hashem. So therefore, so one way of understanding it is, if she had insulted her father, Amram, then she would be in quarantine for 7 days. If she had insulted her mother, Yecheved, same thing. Well, because she insulted Hashem, whose contribution to the human being is equal to that of the parents, the Gemara explains in Nida, that the parents each contribute 5 things towards the baby, and Hashem contributes 10. So therefore, that should require a double quarantine. But Tosfos doesn't like that explanation and brings a couple of questions on it. So then he brings another explanation from Rabbeinu Chaim Kohen, another one of the Baalei Tosfos, that all it is we're saying that, yeah, no matter what, even if you're not going to say that the Shechina should be twice as long as for a human parent, nevertheless, it should definitely be more. The honor for the Shechina should be greater than that for a human being. Once you're saying it's not going to be 7 anymore, then already you're going to say it should be the next larger unit, which would be therefore two units of 7 days each, which is 14 days. So in other words, you're not going to say 1.5 units or something. Tzaraas goes in units of 7. The Ramban just says that you don't really need that. It's just straightforwardly that we're going to say that once we're saying if it's not going to be 7, then it's going to be 14. Anyway, we see from the Torah this concept of Dayoi. Interesting thing in that regard, by the way, that it's brought in Sifrei Kabbalah and in Sifrei Chassidus, that the Yud Gimel Midos Shatoron Adreshes Behem correspond to the 13 Midos Arachmin that we've just been saying throughout our Seder Meitshuva. So therefore, and since Al Pi Kabbalah, the first one of those is Kael, then therefore the first, so therefore that corresponds to Kal v'chomer. And in fact, we see when Moshe is davening for Miriam, he uses that name, Kael na Rafan Allah. Now, in turn, you sometimes have the combination Kael Shakai, and therefore Hashem replies to him with Dayoi, where Dayoi comes from the same Shodesh as Shakai, and therefore it all fits together. So the point is, we see from that that Ela Dayoi Levomen Adin Lias Kenodin. So it's enough if you're going to learn something from a Kal v'chomer, it shouldn't be any stronger. It shouldn't be any stronger than what you're learning from. So, also, by the way, Tosfos points out another possibility, although it's a doifuk to say, would be that Hashem is that Moshe is a melech and a koyan, and therefore for insulting him, it should be double anyway. But whatever. The point is, Tosfos says that once you're saying it's not going to be one, then it should be two, and the Ramban just says that that's the usual way. The Gemara will double these things. Anyway, the point is, we see from that Daya is clearly a concept in our Torah, because we see Hashem himself is saying, because of the Kal V'Chomer, she ought to be subject to Saras for 14 days, but because of Daya, I'm going to limit it to 7. And sure enough, she had Saras for only 7 days, and then they all waited for her. So how can the Chachamim in our Braisa not hold of Daya? So the answer is Ba'alma Dorish Dayoy. Sure, usually the Chachamim Darshan Dayoy, the shiny Hocha, but here, when it comes to, again, the point of Yarshining from a mother, where we want to talk about who Yarshins first, a daughter or a son, Da'amakra, the Pasuk says, Mimatois. The Pasuk had where did we learn Bechlal that the mother, that we're talking about a Yerusha of the mother in the first place, is from this word mimatois, we said, well, that's plural. Makish yerush makish ha'em mate ha'ad. Therefore, by putting the word matois in plural, teaches us that the shevet of the mother and the shevet of the father are both on the same level. In other words, because the pasuk otherwise could have said shnei matos, the pasuk could have said b'chobas yereshes nachla mishnei matos. Instead, it just says mimatos. So that means that in the same word you have over there the father and the mother's shevet together. So therefore, makish mater em mater av ma mater av ben kodem labas. So the chachamim are saying, just like when it comes to the father, the father and the shevet that he comes from, the son inherits ahead of the daughter. Af mater em ben kodem labas. So it is with the shevet of the mother. When there's a Yerusha of the mother, which is that, and now the children are going to yash in it, then the Chachamim are saying, here the Pasuk is implying that once you're learning by a Kal V'Chomer that the son inherits in the first place, then even though usually you have the rule of Dayoy, this word Matos overrides that and tells us, therefore, that the son goes first. So now Rav Zechariah ben Akasev, we're saying, disagrees with that concept, and therefore he says that, no, we have to apply Daya strictly. We can't learn from Mimatis to override it, and therefore when it comes to Yarshining a mother, a son and a daughter go together. So the Gemara brings a couple of cases where Chachamim thought to Paskin like Rav Zechariah ben Akasev. Rav Zechariah ben Akasev, by the way, he's not mentioned often, but he's mentioned here and there in Shas. In particular, from a Mishnah in Ksubas, it comes out that he was one of the ones, well, first of all, from a Mishnah in Yuma, it mentions, no, actually, it's somebody else, never mind, but in a Mishnah in Ksubas, it mentions that he was alive at the time that he lived through the Churban, so he was one of the relatively early Tanoim. So the Gemara tells, Reb Nitoi Sovel Amevad Uvda Kerev Zechariah ben Akatsev. Reb Nitoi thought to Paskin, like Reb Zechariah ben Akatsev, and say that we should say that when it comes to Yarshining from a mother, that we would say that the sons and daughters inherit equally. Amalei Shmuel, Kaman, but Shmuel tells him, who are you thinking to Paskin like? Kerem Zecharia, to Zecharia, you're thinking to Paskin like Zecharia ben Akatsev? Ephes Zecharia, Zecharia doesn't belong. The word Ephes, in modern Hebrew, Ephes means zero, but in Tanakh, it means more like he's gone. Zecharia is gone, in other words, don't even think to Paskin like him. There's no way that you can say that the halacha is like. Why he uses such an unusual expression, Ephes Zechariah. So the Or Sameach actually gives an explanation on a relevant Rambam in this, later on in our Perek, we're going to talk about what happens if you want to override the usual order of Yerusha that you have, father person wants to say before he passes away, instead of the normal order of Yerusha, as it says in the Torah, that sons inherit and not daughters, and that all the sons inherit equally and so on and so forth. I want to do differently. So later on in the parak, we're going to discuss details about what happens if you want to change that. So now, So now you have a din later on in the parak that if we were to say that Rabbi Zechariah ben Akasov's opinion is bechlal accepted at all, then you should have something in a relevant machlokas about that later in the parak that should at least mention his opinion. The fact that his opinion is not even mentioned or even hinted at in the Mishnah, and Rebbe lived several generations after Rabbi Zechariah ben Akasov, so therefore Shmuel is saying that itself implies that Ephes Zechariah, that his opinion is completely rejected, and don't even think to pass them like it. Similarly, the Gemara says, Reb Tavla Ovad Uvda could have Zechariah ben Akatsev. Similarly, Reb Tavla wanted to paskin like Reb Zechariah ben Akatsev. Omalei Reb Nachman, my high. Reb Nachman says, what do you think you're doing? Omalei, so Reb Tavla says, what's the problem? The Omer of Chinin of Ashlemia, Mishmei de Rav, Halacha could have Zechariah ben Akatsev. Reb Chinin of Ashlemia told us in the name of Rav that the Halacha is like Reb Zechariah ben Akatsev in this case. Omalei, Reb Nachman says, Zil Ahadarbach, go take back your psak din. This is what's called toya bidvar mishnah. This is you're making a mistake in a blatant black letter halacha. It's very clear that it's not so. The halacha is not like Reb Zechariah ben Akatsev, especially based on that Ur Sameach, that there's a mishnah that you would expect to at least mention or at least hint at his opinion and doesn't. So this is clearly toya bidvar mishnah. The Eloi, and if you don't change your mind, if you don't take back your psak din, matikna lach Reb Chinin of Ashlemia miunach, I will take Reb Chiya bar Shlemia out of Unach, which means, and I'll explain in a second what Unach means, but meaning, in other words, the Rashbam says, in other words, he's saying, I will put you in Cherem. So because you cannot at all paskin like him. Now, what does Me'unach mean? The word Oin can mean strength. So in various places, this expression "mapik melach meunach" is brought in different places in Shas. It can mean strength. So it can mean, in other words, that I will take him out of your strength. You think you have your strength based on what he's saying. I'm going to take that strength away from you because you're going to be in cheirim and you're not going to be able to do this anymore. Or the word meunach can mean the word una in Aramaic means an ear. So it'll mean, I will take Reb Chinin of Ashlemia out of your ear. In other words, you're thinking to use your ear to listen to what he has to say and to paskin halacha like him, and it's not so. The halacha is not supposed to be like him, and therefore I'm going to force you to no longer listen to him because I'm going to put you in cheirim. There's other points as well. Rabbeinu Gershom also learns that the word oin over here means strength. So it means, in other words, if you don't reverse your psak din, and you end up saying, therefore, that some of these nechasim are going to the daughters when al pi halacha they shouldn't, then I'm going to take away from your own strength, meaning from your own finances, I'm going to take away from you in order to pay back the sons that you unjustly deprived of their inheritance. So in other words, according to all different ways of learning it, he's saying basically nothing doing, don't even think to pass them, like from Zechariah ben Akatsev, and if you do, then you're going to be in big trouble. Another example, Rav Huna Bachia Savala Mevet Uvda could have Zechariah ben Akatsev. Rav Huna Bachia also thought to pass them like Rav Zechariah ben Akatsev. Omalei Rav Nachman Maihai. So again, Rav Nachman says to him also, just like to Rav Tavla, what do you think you're doing? What are you doing? So Rav Huna Bachia answers, "De'omer Rav Huna, Omer Rav, halacha k'Rav Zechariah ben Akatsev." Because Rav Huna said in the name of Rav that the halacha is like Rav Zechariah ben Akatsev. So here you have before Rav Tavla was quoting Rav Chinin of Ashlemia in the name of Rav, saying that now Rav Huna Bachia is saying that Rav Huna, regular Rav Huna, who's not Rav Huna Bachia, just regular Rav Huna in Shas, also said that the halacha is like that the halacha in the name of Rav, that the halacha is like Rav Zechariah ben Akatsev. Omar Lei, so Rav Nachman says to Rav Huna Bachia, Eshlach Lei, should I send a message to Rav Huna and tell him that you're saying this in his name? I don't believe he actually said it. Ichsif, so Rav Huna Bachia was embarrassed. Why would he be embarrassed? Because either maybe Rav Huna changed his mind, says Rashbam, or maybe he's not so certain that Rav Huna actually said that. You do even have sometimes in Shas where it's brought that so there some the, so 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 okay so 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 what we're saying is Rav Huna Bar Chiya is embarrassed that if you send a message to Rav Huna, then I'm going to be exposed over here. So why? So the Rashbam is saying again, because either maybe he changed his mind, or maybe he's not really so certain of him saying that. The Ritva asks, so what are you going to say then? So Rav Huna Bar Chiya just made up the concept that Rav Huna said this. How could you do such a thing? Now, there is a Gemara in Psachim that says that there's an expression over there. Rav Akiva says to Rav Shimon Yochai, in Bikashta Lechonik, he told the Ilan Gadol, which literally means if you want to be strangled, hang yourself from a tall tree. And there is an explanation that some Mefarshim say that it means if you have something in Halacha which you're very certain of, then you're allowed in some cases to attribute it to a certain Gadol, even if he didn't actually say it in so many words. So that could be what happened over here, but still, the Ritva is bothered by it. Then why would he be embarrassed if Rav Nachman sends a message to Rav Huna to verify it? At most, what will happen is Rav Huna will say that I said that, but I changed my mind or something. So the Ritva says maybe what it is Rav Huna Bar Chiya had heard Rav Huna saying this, but not as an actual psak halacha, just like in the course of a discussion or something. So therefore, but he never actually said in so many words that it's the halacha. And if Rav Nachman asks him, Rav Huna may even say, and truthfully, I don't remember saying such a thing, because again, he may have only said it like an incidental thing, and therefore now Rav Huna Bar Chiya would be embarrassed. So the bottom line again is that Rav Huna Bar Chiya is changing his mind and is not gonna end up paskening like this possibility that like Rav Chai ben Akadze. So afterwards, Rav Nachman tells Rav Huna Bar Chiya, "Hashta pinoch nafshi de Rav Huna. You know what? Had Rav Huna actually passed away, and I wouldn't be able to threaten you with that kind of thing of checking with him, atrisis lekibli, then you would have gone out you would have gone out brazenly against me. Meaning, in other words, you would have said, 'Well, I say that this is Rav Huna, that Rav Huna said it, and you have no way to contradict me.' So, in other words, Rav Nachman is saying it's a good thing Rav Huna is still alive, and I had that ability to mention that possibility that I'd check with him, and that caused you to change your mind. Okay. Well, the question is the Ihu Kaman Sovra. Well, given that we do have Rav Chinina Bar Shlemia and Rav Huna reportedly saying in the name of Rav that the halacha is like Rav Zechai ben Akantzev, so where is Rav Nachman? So how is Rav Nachman so certain that Rav did not say that, to the extent that he's threatening Rav Tavla with Chirem or taking away money from him, and the fact that he's trying to embarrass Rav Huna Bar Chiya? What's going on over here? So the Ihu Kaman Sovra. So who in fact does he hold like? And for that matter, Shmuel, who said before Ephes Zechariah, who said so strongly Zechariah's opinion is bottle. So where are they all getting it from? So the answer is Kihod the Rav Shmuel, the Amitavayu, as in fact we find that Rav and Shmuel both say Ein Halacha Krev Zechariah ben Akantzev, that the Halacha is not like him, and therefore that's that. So that's why we can be very certain that Rav did not say that the halacha is like the Zechariah ben Akantzev, and similarly that's where Shmuel is getting so strongly to say Ephes Zechariah. Okay. Further on, the Gemara continues with the story. One time Rabbi Yanai was walking, leaning on the shoulder of his Meshamish, Rabbi Simloi. So Rabbi Simloi himself was a distinguished Talmud Chacham, but he was also serving Rabbi Yanai as a Talmud Chacham, as a Talmud should to his Rebbe. So Rabbi Yanai was old, and he couldn't walk unaided anymore, so he's walking, leaning on Rabbi Simloi's shoulder. He was also, as we're going to see in the continuation of the Gemara, in particular, he was going blind, so therefore he needed to lean on somebody in order to walk. Rabbi Yehuda Nesia was coming in their direction, was coming down the street in their direction. So Rav Simloi tells Rav Yanai, I want you to know who's walking down the street over here. Bar inish to osi lekivlona, this person who's coming in our direction, he is nice, he's an important person. The gulsa yoi, and his gulsa is also very nice. A gulsa is a special fancy talus that they would put on people who had received smicha. In other places, it comes out from the Gemara that it was woven with gold threads. So it can mean it's yoi. It means that it's nice in the sense that it's a talus of a Talmud Chacham. So in other words, Rav Simloi is telling Rav Yanai, this person who's coming to greet us is a Talmud Chacham. And also, no, I can mean it's partial to a very nice piece of clothing. So kimota legabe, but when this person, when Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya came closer to them, Gashasha Rabbi Yanai, who couldn't see him, felt the garment. Omale, he turns to Rabbi Simloi and he says, "You're telling me this is a nice talis of a Talmud Chacham? Den shiure kisach, this kind of clothing, the measurement, this would be the kind of thing where if it was a matter of the halachas of Tumah and Tara, it would have the dinim of sackcloth, which is a coarse fabric, where there the din is that in order for it to be makabel tumah, it has to be at least 4x4 tefachim." So in other words, basically he's putting down and telling Rabbi Simloi, "You're telling me that this is the garment of a Talmud Chacham? This is no better than a sack. Why is he talking so disrespectfully to Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya? We'll talk about soon." So now Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya asks Rabbi Yanai a question. Minayin leben shekodim labas v'nichzeim. How do we know, as we've been discussing on this whole Amud, that a son goes ahead of a daughter in the nechosim of the mother, rather than saying, like Rabbi Zechariah ben Akatsiv, that they inherit equally? Omale, Rabbi Yanai says, Dichtiv matos, because we have the word matos, and as we said before, makish mata aim lamata ab, within that word we're saying that there's a hekish between the mother's mata and the father's mata. So as we said before, ma mata ab ben kodem labas, just like with the father's shevet and what he inherited there, the son goes ahead of the daughter, as said clearly in the psukim. Ah mata aim ben kodem labas, the same way when it comes to the shevet of the mother, the son goes ahead of the daughter. So the same drasha that we brought earlier on the Amud. So then Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya continues to ask, wait, I ma mata av noto pishnayim. Well, in that case, if we're going to compare b'chor noto pishnayim, in that case, then maybe we should make another comparison. The same way as you're going to tell me you're telling me that when it comes to the nechosim of the mother, the son yarshins ahead of the daughter, and we learn that from this hekish, well then by the same logic, we should say what applies to the father's yerusha also applies to the mother's yerusha, not only as far as a son inheriting first, but also as far as when it comes to the inheritance of the father. B'chor noto pishnayim, a b'chor gets a double portion, as we're going to talk about the details of those dinim later in our parak. Af matya em b'chor noto pishnayim, the same way with the mother's shevet, also a son should get a double portion. And in fact, that's not so. So why not? If we're going to be learning from the hekesh, then there's a concept called in hekesh lemechza. You don't do a hekesh for only half the din. So if you're already making a hekesh and saying, therefore, that there's a comparison between the nechosim of the father and the mother, as far as this, as far as who gets first, then it should also be as far as the din of a b'chora. So instead of answering, Omale Lashame, Rabbi Yanai says to his Mishores, to his attendant, to Rabbi Simloi, "Good, pull me and let's continue going. Lais Dain Svila Melach. This person does not want to learn, meaning he just wants to ask unnecessary questions." In other words, the Rashbam teaches that Rabbi Yanai is saying basically this is a very easy question and it's very easy to answer this, and there's no reason he should even be asking the question. As in fact, the Gemara is going to go on to say how in fact we answer the question. Now, what's going on over here? First of all, who is Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya? Now we have like this: there's Rabbi Yehuda Hanossi, who compiled the Mishnah. Then you have, in the generations after him, basically the names of the Nasiim alternated for several generations between Yehuda and Gamliel. You have Rabbi Yehuda Hanossi, then you have his son Rabbi Gamliel, Benoish Rabbi Yehuda Hanossi, who's mentioned in Pirkei Avos and Perek Beis, and is mentioned here and there in Shas. Then you have his son Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya. Now Nasiya is the Aramaic word for, is the Aramaic equivalent of Hanossi. So originally, Rabbi Yehuda Hanossi was called by the Hebrew title Hanossi. His grandson, Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya, was already called with the Aramaic title Nasiya. Ben Yehoyada talks about that it might simply be that this happened when Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya, the grandson of Rebbe, was still young and he hadn't really matured into a Talmud Chacham yet, into a full Talmud Chacham yet, and therefore, so that would also explain. I mean, how is it Rabbi Simloi even couldn't recognize him from a distance, and all he says is that his talus looks nice, and he should inform Rabbi Yanai, So the idea would be, in other words, that this happened when Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya is still a relatively young Talmid Chacham, and that would be why sometimes you find in Gemara sometimes that elder Talmid Chachamim put down lower level Talmid Chachamim to tell them, like, to induce them to be better. In other words, basically, Rabbi Yana is saying with his late gain Sfila Melech, he's saying, you know what, as much as you're developing into a Talmid Chacham, you still have a long way to go, and therefore don't rest on your laurels, basically. Dodas that is showing him has a very interesting explanation of it, which is that there was actually more than one Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya. So you have who was mentioned in Shas, that is. So you have Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya, the grandson of Rebbe. He was still one of the top-level Talmid Chachamim of his times, and he's mentioned in a number of places in Shas. This was already his grandson. So we're talking about this one is already four generations removed from Rebbe. Unfortunately, Dodas Sotah Shonim explains, it comes out from this and from other Gemaras, he was not quite of the caliber of his ancestors, the earlier Nasiim. So he's the Nasi, he's still officially the head of the Sanhedrin and the head of the Jewish people, but now at this point, because he's not as great a Talmid Chacham as his ancestors and the Chachamim, such as Rabbi Yanai, could already see that that's going to be the case, so therefore they had to start putting him in his place, and for example, speaking of his garment as though it's no better than sackcloth, and saying, Lace Dane Svila Melech, exactly that, basically to put him in his place, so he should realize ultimately that, look, as much as I'm the Nasi, and therefore I have tremendous political power as a result of that, I shouldn't say, he should realize to himself, I shouldn't think that I have anything that I belong lording it over the Chachamim, because the fact is they're greater in Torah than I am. So therefore, you have this, you have other examples here and there in Shas, where the Chachamim speak to Rabbi Yehuda, this Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya, a bit disrespectfully, in order to put him in his place and make him realize so he should realize for himself what his place is among the Chachamim. And it worked eventually because he remained a Talmid Chacham of the level that he was at, and he realized as much as relative to the Romans and relative to whoever else he's dealing with on the outside, he is the Nasi and he represents the Jewish people, but he realizes that he has to be subservient to the Chachamim of his time, such as Rabbi Yanai and later Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, because they're much greater than him in Torah. Okay. Another point, by the way, Ben Yehoyada makes is that one reason why Rabbi Yanai says good, let's gain Svila Melech, that he's saying let's get out of here. He doesn't really want to learn. The very fact that as soon as Rabbi Yanai explained to him based on the Hekesh from Matos, right away he had this question about Bechorah, shows that he wasn't really coming to ask a question as in I need to know the answer, but rather that he just wants to kind of show off what he knows, and in fact the answers that the Gemara is going to give over here are relatively obvious, and therefore that's why that would be another point why Rabbi Yanai is putting him down and saying he doesn't want to learn, because he can see, in other words, that he's not really asking to really know the answer. He just wants to ask for the sake of asking and for the sake of, so to speak, showing off how much he knows. Well, the Gemara says, the time am I. Well, now we in a later generation are not going to, we can't say that if we don't know the answer, it's that we don't know how to learn. We taka don't know how to learn. So what is the answer? The time am I. What is in fact the reason why, if we're saying the Hekesh of Matos, why a son shouldn't yarshin a double portion in his mother's nechassim? Amar Abaya, Amar Kra, because the Pasuk says, b'chor l'shayimotze loy. The Pasuk says, as far as a b'chor, that he gets a double portion in everything that's available to him. The word yimotze, we're going to learn later on in the perek, has great implications in halacha as far as what kind of nechassim a son inherits a double portion of. We're going to get to that later on in a couple of weeks, that's the shem. But anyway, the point is that the pasuk says loy to him, implying loy v'loy lo. So therefore it implies only to him, not to her. So therefore we see from that the yerusha of a mother, the concept of a double portion for a bechor doesn't apply. Well, the Gemara says, why? Maybe the Pasuk is only referring to, you have a man who was never married before and doesn't have children, and he married a woman who was previously widowed or divorced and has children from another man. So now the Pasuk is saying, because this Bechor is not, now why does a Bechor get a double portion? The Pasuk calls him Reishis Oinoi. The pasuk says he's the first of his father's strength, meaning he's the firstborn child of his father. Now, in this case, you could say he is the firstborn of his father, because his father never had children before, he was a bachur, but he's not the firstborn of his mother. Maybe that's why the pasuk is implying that therefore he doesn't get a double portion of his mother's property. Maybe the pasuk by saying, maybe by the Torah saying, loy mishpata b'chora, by saying b'chora sheyimatze loy, maybe it's not coming to exclude a b'chora altogether from yarshining a double portion from his mother's nechassim. Maybe if he's her firstborn, then he would. No, because the pasuk also says that the b'chor gets the double portion when he's the first of his strength of the father's, meaning oinoi v'loy oina. So again, only because he's his father's firstborn is that the reason why he gets a double portion, implying that whether he's his mother's firstborn has nothing to do with it. So even if his mother had never been married before, and he is rishis oinah, nevertheless, the pasuk is implying with that word, oinoi, that no, that's not a reason for him to get a double portion. Meaning, in other words, the Rashbam says, because the pasuk could have said, rishis oin. The pasuk didn't have to put a gender marker on the word oin at all. Instead of saying oinoi, and then we're learning from that, not oinah, it could have just said, kihu rishis oin. And then it would mean any time that he's the first of his, of the strength of either parent. But the fact that it says oinoi, therefore, means that means specifically that he gets a double portion because he's his father's bechor, and therefore whether he's his mother's bechor has nothing to do with the matter. The Gemara asks, wait a minute, hahumi boilei lebo acha nefalim. Yeah, but that word, kihu reishis oinoi, we learn a different din from that, that if you have the mother had miscarried, the mother had miscarried one or more times, and then they had a viable baby, that he's considered the bechor for this purpose. He wouldn't be the bechor as far as pidyon haben, but he's still considered the bechor lenachla, the heavy bechor lenachla, that he will be considered the bechor as far as the inheritance, because we learn that from the word reishis oinoi, because the word oin actually has another meaning. The primary meaning of the word oin and the contextual meaning in the pasuk is that it means strength. Reishis oinoi means the first of his father's strength. But the word oin is also related to a word in Lashon Kodesh for like aninus, like oinen, meaning mourning. So we learn from that, misha libet doiva olav. What's considered the firstborn is the one who the parents feel bad about him if he passes away, and they would sit shiva, etc. Libet doiva olav, that their hearts are sad or in mourning for him. Yotzezesh and libet doiva olav, as opposed to with a miscarriage, yeah, you're upset about it, but you don't feel the same. The person doesn't feel the same degree of grief about it, because it was never even a viable baby in the first place. So therefore we learn from that. So in short, in other words, if the mother miscarries, and then later on she becomes pregnant and has a baby boy, then that boy, even though he's not a bechor as far as pidyon haben, because he's not peter rechem, but he is considered a bechor as far as nachla. So we learn that from the word reishis oinoi. So how are you telling me we're learning from reishis oinoi that it means that the only thing that's important is whether he's his father's bechor as far as nachla? And the answer is, imkein lemakroki hu reishis oin. Fine, but if that's the case, then the pasuk didn't have to put a marker on the word oin at all. It could have said kihu reishis oin, that he's the beginning of the strength. And from the word oin, we would also learn that the word oin is related to oinen. My oinoi, instead it says his oin, shma minotauti, therefore we can learn both things. The concept that ha-bo'ach ha-nefalim, that if there were miscarriages before, that he's considered still the b'chor, that we learn from the base word oin. And then in addition, also, that as long as he's his father's b'chor, it doesn't matter whether he's his mother's b'chor as well, and that the whole concept of b'chorda doesn't apply relative to the mother's yerusha. Still, the Gemara asks, Vakati ema hani mili alman shenosim sola. Fine, you could say the other way around. Then maybe the pasuk wants to tell us if he's already a previously married man who's previously had children, and he marries a basula, then the pasuk wants us to know that his first son with her is not considered a bechor because he's not his father's bechor. Avo bechor shenosim sola hachinami deshakil. Maybe you could still argue that when neither of them have been married before, neither of them have ever had children before, and therefore that he is a bechor from both sides, he's a bechor of his father and of his mother, maybe indeed hachinami d'shakil, maybe indeed after all he would get a double portion of his mother's of his mother's yerusha as well. Here at this point we don't have there's no particular reason to say after all that so you would say, in other words, when the pasuk is saying reishis oinoi, so it wants to tell us, in other words, you should realize that even though this father remarried and now his firstborn son may be considered a bechor as far as pidyon haben, you need to be told that he's not a bechor as far as nachla, and not as far as nachla from his father, because he's not a bechor and not from the mother either. But maybe in fact the pasuk is not excluding the case where he's a bechor from both of them. Ela Omar Rava, so rather Rava says, you're right, you can't really learn it from the word reishis oinoi, but rather Omar Krub, because the pasuk continues, loy mishpat habachorah. To him, that firstborn son is the rights of the firstborn. So from that word loy, we learn mishpat habachorah laish. The concept, the rules of bachorah apply only in other words, in context, the pasuk is saying the word loy refers to him, the child, but we're darshining loy as if it refers back to the father. Loy to him. Him, the father previously mentioned, Mishpat HaBechorah, is the rules of Bechorah. So that means the general rule of Bechorah only applies loy, only applies to the Bechorah from the father's side, and whether he's a Bechorah to his mother has nothing to do with the whole matter. Which Tosfos points out, in that case then really, so now we don't really need all those drushes that the Gemara was trying to do from B'chol Asher Yimotzei Loi and Oinoi and all of that, so evidently then those drushes must now be used for some other purposes. So, in fact, there's a Gilyon in Tosfos, there's a marginal note, which we don't find in front of us here in Tosfos, but Marashah adds it, I guess, based on manuscripts of Tosfos that he had in front of us, that Tosfos points out maybe we would say, once we have oinoi means veloi oina, and asher yimotzei loi, maybe we would say that you don't have the concept of bechorah at all, even by the father. And the answer is that no, we would say that the earlier psukim are talking about a case where the father never had children and the mother did. So we would have thought, after all, he's getting a double portion from his, from his father. So maybe he should get from his mother as well. So therefore we need to be told that not. But ultimately, Rava is saying we really doubt in it primarily from the words loy mishpat habachorah. Okay. Next, the Mishnah had said the next one, who is a one-directional inheritance, where he inherits from the other one, but the other one doesn't inherit from him, is ishes ishtei v'chola, a man to his wife. A man yarshins his wife if she passes away, but the reverse is not true. So, menahani mili, where do we know that from, that a husband yarshins his wife? So, the Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, the Pasuk says she'eroi. After it lists all the various relatives, the pasuk says, if he has no relatives, then you give his nachla to she'eroi. And the word, now before, at the beginning of the parak, we learned that she'eroi can mean his father. But now we're darshaning differently. She'eroi zu ishtoi. The word she'eroi means his wife. As we find, for example, the pasuk kim l'she'eroi, akorev elov, that a koyin is able to become tomei to his wife. She'era literally means his flesh, and Rashbam points out, after all, in Parshas Bereishis, you already have, right, when Adam and Chava get married, then you have a husband and wife become levoser echad, they become one flesh. So therefore, in other words, the Rashbam explains, the Pasuk is not saying if there's no other closer relatives, then it goes l'she'eroi, which would imply that the wife is last in the list. Rather, it means in general, there's a concept that Yerusha has to go to someone who's boser echad. Now, Yochel Afhi Tirashenu, you would think that means that she can yarshin from him as well. Tamad Lema, no, because the pasuk says Yorash Oisa, it says he yarshins from her. Again, the word Oisa in the pasuk, in the simple sense, you would say Oisa means it, the inheritance. But here, we're also darshining. Oisa means her, as in he yarshins from her. Therefore, we learn from that. Hu Yorash Oisa, ve'in he yorashes Oisa. So the husband inherits from his wife, but not the other way around. So the Gemara asks, the fact is, the Pasuk doesn't seem to say that. The Pasuk says, when a satam is nachalosai, you should give it inheritance, l'she'eroi ha'korev elav, to his she'eroi, who's closest to him. So it sounds like the other way around. It sounds like we're saying that the husband's Yerusha goes to his wife and not the other way around. So what are you telling me? That it's exactly the other way around? What are you telling me? It's exactly the other way around, that the husband Yerushins the wife and not the reverse. So what's going on over here? Omer Abaya Tritz Hachi. So Abaya says you can enter the pasuk as follows. You can reread the pasuk as follows to make it yield the din that we're saying. Unesata masnachalosa. You should give his inheritance la korev elav to the one who is closest to him, meaning that his relatives inherit him, she'eroi, and then when it comes to she'eroi, namely his wife, the yorash oisa, then he should inherit her. So you can reword the pasuk kind of to make it yield this din. Omar Abaya, Omar Rava, so Rava says, Fatina Harifa Masaka Kroi, what are you doing? Are you cutting apart the pasuk with a knife? You're taking the words of the pasuk and you're moving them around in order to create a new meaning over here. You can't do that. The fact is, the pasuk says, that you give the nachla, it doesn't say lakoroi, it says l'she'eroi. So you're taking the word hakorev and you're moving it earlier, and you're switching around the order of words in the pasuk, and then you can't do that. How can you learn that way? You actually, the Ritva actually adds, in fact, Abaya's Drosha would require you to even insert letters to insert letters that aren't even in the pasuk. You're saying that the pasuk is Unisatamas Nachalosa L'She'eroi HaKoroiv, and you're changing it into LaKoroiv, and L'She'eroi you're changing to U'She'eroi. So it doesn't work. Ela Omar Rava Hochikama. Rather, we can learn the pasuk as follows: Unisatamas Nachalos She'eroi Loi. You can the words nachlosoi l'she'eroi, you can reword. Now you're going to ask if he's rewording. It's also the same question that you're cutting apart. We'll explain that in a minute. But anyway, nachlos she'eroi loi, the nachla of his she'er, of his relative, and we said she'er means his boser echad, his wife, loi goes to him. Namely, kosavar, that Rava holds of the concept gurin and mesikin vidoshin. It's a valid way to darshin psukim. By gurin, we subtract letters from one word, or mesikin, we attach those letters to a different word, vidoshin, and then we can darshin the result. So therefore, we can take the words nachlosoi l'she'eroi and re-spell them to create the words nachlos she'eroi loi. Now, you have the question in that case, you have the same question that he has on Abaya, that he's cutting and pasting the pasuk together. So first of all, the Rashbam explains that you don't really need, even without the Gurdon and Masifin Redoshin, you could reinterpret the pasuk in this way without actually having to cut apart any words at all. You're saying basically, when a Satamas Nachalosai, you give his inheritance, L'She'eroi, as far as whom does this din apply, as far as She'eroi, that he should yarshin her. So therefore, by cutting and pasting the letters in the pasuk, it makes it easier to understand nachos she'eroi loy. But nevertheless, we could actually understand it from the pasuk even without cutting it apart. That's first of all. And second of all, also you have also the Rashbam says another point is, when would we call it sakina harifa mafsaka kroi? Rava's objection is only when you're moving around words in the pasuk. But when you're moving around letters within words, then that's a valid way of darshaning. According to the Ritva, also who pointed out that Rava's problem with Abaya's drasha is that you're adding letters that didn't even exist in the pasuk. Where here you don't even have that, because here Rava is using the same letters and he's just rearranging them. There is a good deal of discussion as far as the mechanics of this Gurdon and Mesifin Vidoshin, how it works. In particular, there are places where Tosfos discusses that maybe that only works. Maybe you're only allowed to, for Gurdon and Mesifin Vidoshin, to take letters from the end of the word and put them to the beginning, but not, for example, to take letters from the middle of the word and add them elsewhere. So here you're saying nachlosa l'sheiroi, and you're taking the vav from the end of one word and the lamed from the beginning of another, and making the word loy out of it, that would be valid. But for example, if the drosha were to require us to take words from the, to take letters from the middle of the word, not necessarily would that work. Apichsidus, there's an idea, the Mizutra Magid brings in the Sefer Ur Torah, that we have in Apichabolah, we have the concept that's discussed in connection with Rosh Hashanah, the concept of Nisira. We have when Hashem first created Chava, he sawed off, so to speak, a part of Adam's body, and then created Chava out of it. And we have the concept that every year you have, there's a Nisira, there has to be Malchus, has to be cut away from Zah, and reassembled, so to speak, into a new thing, and that represents the whole thing that Hashem now has a new Ratzon for the coming year to rule over the world, which is what we accomplish by crowning Hashem with Tkiyas Shofar and all the Tfilos of Rosh Hashanah. But it's called in Kabbalah Nisira. So the Mizutra Magid points out, we have an example in Nigla of Nisira over here. We were cutting apart words, Gurin, Umesif and Vidoshin, is this concept of Nisira. The Rebbe Rashab adds in one of his Maimorim that we also have something in an Avoida. This is the Avoida of a Baal Teshuva. He has to cut away the negative things that he's been doing, almost Sifin, and he has to increase in the good things that he's doing, the Dershin, and then the result is we have a valid Drosha, we have a valid way of him to continue and grow in his Avoida that requires that cutting away and reassembling. So here we're seeing that we're using it as far as to Darshan matters of Halacha as well. There's other examples of it here and there in Shas. So we'll continue tomorrow. Beis Hashem, the Gemara is going to bring another source in Sukkim for this concept that a husband yarshins his wife and not vice versa.